Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we're doing on Sunday evening. Joining us from New York City, back home finally, Tim Bontemps.
Yes, sir. Hello, fellas.
Tim made a little side trip to the Hall of Fame festivities this week in New England. We'll maybe touch on that a little bit later, but maybe not.
I did. Shout out to Mark Spears.
Absolutely. Now a bona fide Hall of Famer, Anscape's Mark J. Spears.
That's
with
right.
The Kurt Gowdy Award in the Hall of Fame. Very proud moment for all of us at ESPN. Congratulations, Mr. Spears. Looking forward to having him back on soon. And joining us from Dallas, Texas, Band McMahon.
Howdy, partners.
Are you a member of any Halls of Fame, McMahon?
Only in my own mind.
That's a big one.
Distinguished graduate of North Texas.
Dude, you know what? They actually sent it. So they're going into a new conference. The AAC.
Who isn't?
Yeah, exactly. So they're part of that.
Right. They might be in the same conference as Stanford.
No,
Stanford, North Texas.
I've always said it's
just all the same.
I've always referred to it as the Stanford of Denton County. But
that's right.
No, but so they sent all these like media members who are North Texas graduates like some nice gear. And I know this because I saw people posting about it on Twitter. I didn't even get a damn free T-shirt. So Hall of Fame, I can't even get a T-shirt anymore.
Hmm. And you love T-shirts. Man. I've seen you wear some T-shirts you clearly got for free.
Absolutely. And I get there might have been a minimum GPA requirement. That would be the only explanation I can come up with.
I see. All right. So we do have some NBA stuff going on here. Adrian Wojnarowski reported on Saturday that the 76ers have ended trade talks involving James Harden, and their plan is to bring him to training camp. He made it very clear that he doesn't think this wasn't necessarily an agreement. This wasn't like last year with Kevin Durant, where right about the same time, I didn't look up the exact date, but it's about the same time, Durant and the Nets sort of agreed to cease fire, and they were going to just, you know, sort of forge ahead, although it didn't last that long. That's not the case here. Philadelphia is basically making it known that they are not going to trade him. Now, what I would say here, and I don't want anybody to think that I don't have great respect for Daryl Morey. I just know that Daryl Morey plays games. And he wins negotiations. He routinely, throughout his career, has won negotiations. And that doesn't mean that he doesn't lost them. Doesn't mean that's what's going to happen here. But Daryl Morey plays games. And I would say ended what trade talks? I don't think they were active. I don't think there's any active trade talks in the NBA right now. Certainly not active for Dame Lillard. And I don't think there's anything active for James Harden. And so to me, McMahon, because I know you've dealt with Morey in stalemates before, to me, this is, as the patriarch would say in Succession, why is his name failing me right now? I'm showing my age.
Kendall Roy.
Logan Roy.
Logan Roy.
Roy would say, it's a move. this is some sort of move. I don't know what it is. I don't know what he's trying to accomplish. But I think he's doing something, because otherwise, why would you make a strategy announcement? Why would you stick your foot in the sand on August 12th or whatever it was? But that's just my opinion. No one's told me that. I've just been told the same thing that Adrian reported, which is that he's quote unquote off the market and we'll see him in September. McMahon, what was your reaction to that quote unquote development?
I would say, where are we going to see him in September? Are we sure that's going to be in the 76ers training camp? I mean, with James Harden, when he wants out, you never know where he might pop up. I would say he's just as likely to be in Las Vegas as he is in Philly. I haven't checked.
For the in-season tournament? Beginning November 4th?
I'm talking about for the start of training camp. Haven't checked on Little Baby. You know, I don't know if there's a – will he be on tour? If so – pretty good chance James might decide he wants to hang out with him. Look, this is a deal where, yeah, Daryl, he drew his line in the sand, but James long ago drew his. and Daryl has a track record of winning negotiations, sure. James has a track record of when he wants to get the hell out of town, he succeeds. And so, you know, the history that they
have. To where he wants to go.
Exactly. The history that they have, the great relationship over the years, the commissioned painting of James Harden that hangs in the entryway of Daryl Morey's home, the Basketball Jesus t-shirts, none of that matters now because this relationship has been blown to smithereens, and Harden clearly feels like he was done wrong. I'm not suggesting that when Harden decided to do that 1+1, there was a wink-wink deal in place that he expected to get a certain deal the next summer. I would never suggest such a thing, but I just think that
excuse me, the 76ers were busted for tampering last year, and I think they are going to be clean as a whistle going forward. That's my belief.
Yep, they will be the one team in the NBA that never tampers again. I am quite sure of that. I'm quite sure. Well, maybe the Knicks, because the Knicks got hit with the second round pick too for getting a you know, point guard is the best player on Team USA right now for what ended up being a discount deal. So I'm sure the Knicks.
I know they've only got 13 future seconds instead of 14. They're suffering.
Right. But no, I mean, look, this is going to be one hell of a standoff. And a couple things real quick. Number one, I've said it before, I'll say it again. If there's one lead decision maker, personnel decision maker in the NBA who does not give a damn about an awkward situation, it is Daryl Morey. So that's one thing. The other thing I'm going to say is the last time that Daryl Morey and James Harden strongly disagreed on something that could, you know, it was a major issue, Chris Paul got shipped to Oklahoma City in what's proven to be one of the worst trades of the, you know, since who knows when, of the last 20, 25 years. By the way, which was James getting his way.
I said to you guys a month ago when this started that I thought this is how this is going to go. And I'm not surprised that we're sitting here with James Harden still on the Sixers and no trade happening and no trade imminently happening. And part of that's because, as we know, Daryl Morey all but certainly wants to have James Harden on his team. And part of that is because of the same thing that we've talked about with the Damian Lillard situation for the last month also, which is that there's just not a lot of interest in James Harden. There are not teams lined up around the block to trade for James Harden, just like there's not teams lined up around the block to trade for Damian Lillard. Now, we could say, well, the Clippers would love to have James Harden at the right price, or various teams would be interested in having Damian Lillard at the right price. That doesn't mean you want those guys. That means you'll take them if the deal is good for you, right? And that is really, I think, the underlying thing in this whole situation. Maybe James Harden will show up in October and do what he did a couple years ago in Houston, or maybe he won't show up at all. But I do think the very significant difference in this situation than in the prior instances when James Harden was able to force his way to another destination was he doesn't have another destination sitting there saying, come on board, man. We're going to make this happen. We're going to get you here. When he was in Houston, you had Philly and Brooklyn bidding to get him. When he was in Brooklyn, he knew that Philly was sitting there waiting to bring him in with Daryl Morey, with Tad Brown, wanting to give him a contract. All that stuff was sitting there for him, right? Now, that doesn't exist. And I think, to me, like I've thought for the last month, if James Harden wants to get paid next summer, which very clearly has been his goal in this whole process, he is worried about getting paid next summer. To me, the way for him to do that is to show up in Philly now and play well and then go be a free agent next summer and go get paid. And we'll see if that's the path he takes or if it ends up being a chaos-filled disaster. I certainly think the latter path could very well happen because of the track record we all know about here. But I do think this is a much different situation than the ones we've seen before because there just isn't a team sitting there going, yeah, we got to have James Harden on our team. There's a couple saying, yeah, we'd like to have him for something, but there's no incentive for Philadelphia to trade him right now, and there's no team banging on their door to do it. And so as much as James Harden might be upset about the current circumstances he's in, A, if he hadn't opted into his contract, I think he'd have the kind of deal he wanted, and he would be in a decent situation in Philly going forward, but he did opt in. And I think he's going to be there for the foreseeable future because I just don't think a trade's happening one way or the other.
Well, another thing that kind of goes along the lines of what you were saying, Bontemps, the first time he asked for a trade, I think if my notes are correct, which they may not be, he had just finished third in the MVP voting and was coming off a stretch of, like, I don't know, 5 or 6 years where he either won the MVP or was in the top three almost every year. And his leverage was higher. And you've talked about this before at the beginning of the summer, is that even though his contract is also a different situation, it's one thing to demand a trade when you have multiple years left on your contract. It's another thing to demand a trade when you have 1 year left. But it's also another thing to demand a trade when you are not performing at the level that you were, you know, 3 years prior. And he still is a player who teams would have interest in. But I don't think he's a player that teams are ready to give the kind of long-term, huge-dollar contract that he seems to want. And so there is some strategy that he has to consider when it comes to how to approach, you know, this presentation that the 76ers have now, you know, presented him. Sure, it is easy to just assume that he will do what he did in Houston. Which I still can't understand. I still can't explain that one game where he showed up looking like he had gained 30 pounds and then 10 days later looked fine.
Those four years.
It's one of the great mysteries of the last decade.
Those 4 years leading into 2020, second, first, second, and third in MVP. And there was a ninth place when they finished eighth in the West, and he finished second the year before that. So top three, 5 out of 6 years and 4 years in a row. Obviously, last year he led the league in assists, but he wasn't a guy who was seen as one of the three best players in the league, which he was for half a decade.
He's a very good player. He is not a give a 5 year max player. And it is the underlying situation that we do not know and will never know is what McMahon touched on, which was what was said or what was even understood. It didn't even have to be said,
right?
What was understood a year ago, and that brings baggage into any discussion with the 76ers. But it just because that's what he's done in the past, and it wasn't just in Houston, it was that West Coast trip that he had with the Nets where he basically folded up shop and they recognized what was happening and they traded him. I don't think that we should assume he's going to go down that path again because of the situation that Bontemps has laid out. And I do think that over this next 7 weeks, between now and the start of camp, or 6 weeks or whatever it is, I think it's seven, there's going to be some maneuvering and some strategizing done on both sides. And I would say my bottom line is, just because Daryl Morey says trade talks are done doesn't mean that they're done. And just because James Harden didn't report or reported in, you know, with a certain mindset in the past and the situation, doesn't mean he'll do that again. That's my bottom line read.
And you're right about this being a different situation for Harden, the circumstances being different. And if he doesn't realize that yet, like, I don't know when he will, because let's be honest, when he took that deal last summer, he thought he was going to have his choice of long-term max offers. Am I going to go back to Houston and have that reunion and run a franchise again? Or am I going to stay in Philadelphia, you know, be on a contender, be okay being Joel Embiid's sidekick and continuing to play for Daryl Morey? It ends up that he didn't have either of those options. And now his option is, do I make the best of a situation I don't want to be in anymore with Philadelphia, which is not willing to put a long-term max type of deal on the table? Or do I raise as much hell as possible in the hopes of getting out? And, you know, does that help his long-term situation? I can understand him looking at this saying, the best thing for my long-term financial picture would be getting to a team that would be interested in using bird rights to keep me in the future. But if it's really messy, I don't know.
Well, and there's also the fact to consider, right? I mean, look at the Houston situation. All year long, it was, well, maybe James is going to go back to Houston. Houston chose another point guard. right? Mm-hmm. They were trying to spend money this summer, and they actively chose to sign somebody else. And if you're looking at signing a guy in his mid-30s, who now for a third time in 4 years is going, I'm not happy here, when this is about the best possible situation he could be in from a competitive standpoint. You've got Joel Embiid, who's an unbelievable pick and roll partner for him. They had the best, their pick and roll was the most dominant play in the league last year. He led the league in assists. The team is run by the guy who his whole career is owed to him and wants him to be a huge part of the franchise. And all of this stuff is set up for them to be a really good competitive team. They've got Tyrese Maxey next to him. They went and got PJ Tucker last summer, one of his best friends in the league. Like, it's all set up for this to be a good situation for James Harden, and he's still not happy. So
yeah, When is he going to be? Philly wanted to keep him. They just didn't want to give him a 5-year max.
Right.
Here's the other part. We don't know what Philadelphia would have done because he opted in. If he had opted out of his contract and become a free agent, the Sixers didn't have a choice, really, right? They had him sitting there. They probably would have had to come to some sort of a long-term agreement or long-ish term agreement with him if he wanted to make one.
You're just going over old ground that you were right about. It was what Kyrie Irving got that 3-year 120. Was it 120 or 125?
Yeah, 125. Yeah, something like that.
3 years, 120 plus an extra six in incentives with a player option.
Is it unreasonable to think Harden couldn't have gotten that?
Absolutely not. Or absolutely, totally reasonable. I mean, Philly was going to be over a barrel. If he had opted out, he would have had the leverage. Him opting in and all of the stuff that's happened, him opting in is the thing that doesn't really make any sense. Because then he ceded all control in the situation of the Sixers.
Let me say something about Houston real quick. Houston getting Fred VanVleet, choosing basically to prioritize Fred VanVleet. Number one, VanVleet's younger, even though he's dealt with a little bit of a knee issue. Number two, his max is lower. He's a 30% max player versus, if Harden wanted the maximum 35%, that's a big difference. Forget about his fit, just his fit as a player and with what they've got on the roster and whether you want James there. Thirdly, he was willing to come for 2 years max guarantee.
Mm-hmm.
Was Harden willing to take 2 years max guarantee? I'm not sure about that. I mean, maybe at the very end he might have, but they obviously, they made their choice. The other thing I'm going to say about Houston is I was watching some highlights this last few days of Alperen Şengün playing for the Turkish national team. Now, Turkey did not qualify for the World Cup, and that is a bummer because Şengün looks great. And he's distributing the ball. He had a really solid second season, put up his numbers. And I think Şengün, I wouldn't rule out them running a little bit of their offense through him.
Well, if you're going to have him on the floor, you better, because he is your best passer. He's your best facilitator. And rumor has it, the guy grew a couple inches over the summer. Seriously.
Yeah, I mean, if it works out well for him, he's a Demonis. I mean, you're not going to say he's Jokic, but he's definitely built in the mold of a Jokic or a Demonis Sabonis, a guy that's going to get you a bunch of assists and get you rebounds and can be the hub of your offense out of the high post.
I think that Şengün is definitely a big time talent offensively. I'm just going to say, though, if the Rockets were that sold on him being a high level starter, why did they try to get Brook Lopez? Why did they?
That's right.
I mean, they thought it was a done deal. They're making moves to dump a little bit of salary with Atlanta so they could get Lopez signed to the deal that was on the table. So I am with you as far as Şengün being a very intriguing talent, but I am also going to point out they tried to sign a starting center this summer.
Well, if you look at I think they
wanted to do that real quick. May I rebut? They want to do that because they're trying to make the playoffs this year.
Right.
And I'm not saying that Şengün is going to help make the playoffs this year, but that, I mean, I don't think that should be necessarily taken as a vote of no confidence in Şengün.
I would agree and disagree. I mean, Şengün's going into his third year. It's not like he's shown nothing at this point. He's a very interesting young player. And if you're paying Brook Lopez or trying to pay him in the neighborhood of 50 over two, that is a sign that, like, if you're trying to make the playoffs, like, that means you don't think he can help you make the playoffs in his third year in the league. That tells you something about where, whether it's Ime Udoka or the front office or both or whatever, it does tell you something about where they view him and where they view his deficiencies, to McMahon's point. I am intrigued to see him and Jabari Smith play next to each other because they should really mix and match very well. And some of Jabari's defensive ability could be a really interesting pairing with Sengun. And I think that could fit really well. So in the long term, it might work out really well for them. But I've been interested since Ime got there because you look at the centers that they had in Boston, they were all they were defensively focused. And Sengun is an offensively focused center who is going to struggle on the defensive end. And that is going to be an interesting thing to watch. Is Ime cool with that? Or would he rather have more of a traditional defense first center like Brook Lopez? So we'll see where that goes from here.
I would just say Sengun is a player, based on what I've seen and heard about this summer, to keep an eye on for the way he's going to play this year. So,
well, by the way, you want to talk about if a couple years ago, the Oklahoma City Thunder could have drafted Alperen Sengun, did technically draft him. They traded him for a couple of mediocre future first round picks, which, by the way, they later turned into Usman Jang, who they drafted the next year. So really, it comes down to a Usman Jang versus Alperen Sengun thing going forward. But you put Sengun on that Thunder team, be pretty interesting. So, you know, that's something I've watched since that draft night, and it's going to be very interesting to see where that goes moving forward too. Because him and Shea running some pick and rolls would look pretty good too.
By the way, Shea had 26 points and 6 steals in 20 minutes.
He's pretty good.
I mean, it was against New Zealand. It wasn't, you know, against the Dream Team, but. That wasn't unimpressive.
He certainly could be the best player in the Philippines when the World Cup hits that stage.
Well, you know, I did an interview with Carl Towns, who's playing for the Dominican. For weeks, all we've heard is guys who are not playing. And Giannis affirmed, I think it was on Friday, that he was not going to play. Not a surprise. He was termed as doubtful. Not that Frank Ntilikina is a major headliner. But Ntilikina is just withdrew from the World Cup due to an injury. France is a contender. He's one of their starters, so it's interesting. Anyway, Carl Towns is playing for the Dominican. It's the first time he's played in 10 years. I did an interview with him, a story I think is going to run Monday or Tuesday. And, you know, Carl Towns, from a resume standpoint, is one of the three or four, you know, he's got a Supermax contract. Mm-hmm. He's one of the three or four most highly decorated players in the tournament. And you put him on a team like the Dominican Republic and, you know, things could happen. But all right, well, we'll see how the Harden thing develops. I think there's more twists and turns before the opening of training camp. Bontemps, before we go on, I think you've got some trivia.
I do. James Harden-centric trivia.
Oh, hey.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
If only starting your fitness journey was as easy as starting this podcast. The truth is, all the lift big, get big, and beach body ready in 3 weeks pressure stops most of us from even starting. And starting is what matters most. It's everything. Wherever you're beginning and wherever you want to be, Peloton encourages you to just start. With thousands of classes to get you moving and doing what you can, even if that's just a 10-minute low-impact class, they have those too. And when you're ready, take it up a gear with a 30-minute live DJ ride. Start with Peloton and find instructors that will keep you motivated to stay on your fitness journey. Learn the basics and build from there. Remember, doing something is everything. Get started with a Peloton bike or bike plus rental at onepeloton.com/bike/rentals. Terms apply. Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
And now to present today's trivia question, the whiz of the quiz, Tim Bontemps.
Well, little James Harden-centric trivia. I was looking around for a James Harden question when we were getting ready for the pod. James Harden is 12th currently in active games played among all players. Who are the guys ahead of him?
Active. Okay. Does this mean guys who are signed to a team right now?
Yes. So okay, Andre Iguodala is not on the list. And Trevor Ariza, who's technically active, according to Basketball Reference, is not on the list.
Okay. I'm just going to bring up a list of teams. I'm not cheating. I'm just reminding myself.
He always says this. I have to.
And then he just starts ripping off answers every time.
I have to disqualify myself because I didn't hear the question. Long story short.
Oh, God. Here's the question.
James Harden is 12th among active players in games played. Who are the guys ahead of him?
I mean, obviously LeBron.
LeBron is number one.
Okay. Al Horford.
Al Horford is 13 games ahead of him.
Okay, 13. So, okay. That's
number two.
Jeff Green.
Jeff Green is ahead of him. That's three.
Okay. Wendy, feel
Russell
free.
Westbrook.
Westbrook is four.
KD, I'm guessing, is not ahead of him.
KD is 14 games behind him.
He's okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Did Udonis Haslem retire?
Yes, he is not. He did actually retire. I don't know if he is ahead of him, actually. I'm actually going to check that while you're looking up names. I don't know if he is.
I don't think Steph will be ahead of him.
Steph is not.
Okay, he's missed too many games. Yep. Clay would have missed too many games.
Yep.
Lord knows Kawhi's missed too many games, as has Paul George.
They're all guys drafted in the 2000s, not the 2010s. There's one very obvious one.
Chris Paul.
Not named yet. Chris Paul, that one.
Yeah, that's a very obvious one. Dame.
Dame is not ahead of him.
He's not. Wow.
No. Again, 2000 from 2009 back draft years.
This is a good one.
PJ Tucker.
PJ Tucker is not. One guy comes up on the pod almost every week.
DeAndre
Bob Jordan.
Bob Pettit.
That was good. DeAndre Jordan is one of them.
Really stretching the definition of active there.
He's under contract with the team.
He will be sliding on a ring, which he got meaningful minutes in the finals there.
That is true.
He played in a finals game, I believe.
We got one, two, three, four, five guys.
There's 11 in trouble.
Man, this is a tough one. Kevin Love.
Kevin Love is not ahead of him.
Damn it.
Jeez.
Okay. Okay. There's
three of them were on the Raptors.
Together
on the Raptors.
Kyle Lowry.
Yep.
Otto Porter Jr.
No. Kyle Lowry's the right time frame, though.
Not Kawhi. We've already said. Oh. Is our colleague? Why am I blanking on my guy's name? He's got rings from all over the league. Danny Green? Is he active? Okay.
No. I don't know. He's not on a team. He also isn't ahead of him. The clue I just gave you is a very good one. There were three Raptors who played together who are all ahead of him. Kyle Lowry's one of them. The other two are in the same time frame.
DeMar DeRozan.
DeMar is one of them.
Not Van Vliet.
No. Famously was traded away from the Raptors when they turned things around.
Oh, Rudy Gay. Is he still in the league?
Yes.
Actually, that's bullcrap. He was cut by the Thunder.
Oh, that's right. He was cut by the Thunder. That's my bad.
The whole thing's invalid.
The whole thing's invalid.
Yeah. I think he was traded like seven times this summer and cut by the Thunder.
I was thinking he was still under contract.
No.
There's two players left. one is under contract on the Raptors now.
On the Raptors now? Oh, man. Who's the Raptors geezer now?
He barely played last year, so you might not remember him.
In Toronto?
Yeah.
I'll be honest with you. I'm going to struggle.
Played for the Sixers, the Nets, the Pacers, the Wolves, the Bulls. Power forward. It's bounced around. Lefty.
Oh, Thaddeus Young.
Thaddeus Young.
Wow.
Third in active games played behind Chris Paul and LeBron.
Yeah. That's amazing. Now, that would have been a great question.
The other guy is a point guard who is on his third team.
Point guard on his third team has been around for
traded last season.
Reggie Jackson.
No.
He's on his sixth team.
Yes. Traded last season at the deadline for another point guard. not on the sixth best roster in the
league. Mike Conley.
Mike Conley.
Ah, there you go. I should have gotten Conley. That's a good. That was a tough one. That was a tough one. All right. You cheated a little bit.
We didn't give in. We didn't give in, McMahon. We
the other
went
ones,
to the bitter
the
end.
Other ones involving Harden were all. He's like he was like third or second in all these different categories. So I was trying to find one where it was at least sort of interesting. It wasn't just LeBron or LeBron and you know Chris Paul ahead of him or something.
All right. Well, Team USA has played three exhibition games as they get ready for the World Cup. I'm heading out on Monday to join them in Abu Dhabi, where they play Germany and Greece this week. By the way, the Germans beat the Canadians the other day, in another indication that the Canadians are, you know, still learning. And it was there was some smack talk going on. It was in Berlin, and some in-game smack talk between Dennis Schroeder and Dylan Brooks.
I am shocked that it was those two guys that were involved in that.
Canadians got him back today in overtime.
Oh, they did. I didn't see that final.
RJ had 31, RJ Barrett. Canadians won in overtime by a point to win the – they played some sort of cup tournament. And they
yes.
Who's coaching the Canadians again?
Jordy Fernandez.
Oh, that's right.
King's assistant, who took over for Nick Nurse when he dropped out a couple months ago.
Who interviewed, I think, for three jobs this summer. Interviewed in Phoenix for sure. He was a finalist in Phoenix.
He will be a head coach soon.
Yes. 41 years old. I interviewed him. I've known him since 2009, and I interviewed him a couple of days ago for a piece that's coming, and he told me who he interviewed with, and I forgot already.
So it's a huge opportunity for him. I mean, the Canadians, as we've talked about, you know, they've got arguably the best player in the tournament. They've got one of the deepest rosters in the tournament, certainly outside of, you know, they're on par or close to it with the United States. They're as good or better than anybody else in the tournament. They've got a great shot to, at minimum, medal. And, you know, if it's Team USA and Canada in the gold medal game, Canada could win that game. They've got a real shot.
Wendy, how many teams make it to the Philippines?
32 are in the World Cup.
Okay, so everybody goes to the Philippines.
I thought it was 24.
Well, 32.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some teams that are left out. Like I said, Turkey
didn't
qualify. Argentina didn't qualify. These are mainstays that didn't make it. But
it 32
make it, and then 12 make it next year to Paris. And obviously, everybody's trying to win the World Cup. That's the goal. But really, for most of these teams, they're trying to get one of those 12 spots. It's hard to qualify for the Olympics. By the way, the United States, which won the Tokyo Olympics, they qualified by the skin of their teeth because they finished seventh in 2019 World Cup. They barely qualified. So that's one of the things that the Canadians are fighting for. And that would be great because the Canadians haven't been, I think they last, don't hold me to this.
Last time they played was in, no. It was in Sydney. They played when RJ's father, Rowan Barrett, and Steve Nash were on the team.
Okay, but even still, they haven't played in five Olympics. So, and they have the second most talent in their country.
Yeah.
So, just them making the Olympics would be a terrific step forward. So, but anyway, Team USA has played three games. They played far and away their most challenging game on Sunday in Malaga, Spain, against Spain, sold out arena, and this was exactly the type of game. If you don't like FIBA basketball, I'm not going to try to talk you into it. But the reason the FIBA basketball is interesting is because the type of game that was played on Sunday. The officiating was a joke. The game was on Fox.
It's always charitable to say it is suspect.
Well, the great thing was that they honored one of the refs at halftime because it was like his last game.
Bill Rafferty was calling the game for Fox and like a couple of times just had to laugh. Just like, you know, he couldn't openly say that this officiating is a joke. There was just one hilarious moment where there was this blatant foul on Jalen Brunson. He turned the ball over and they just wore it as a turnover. He just looked at the ref and gave him the thumbs up. He just thumbs up.
Well, there was another one when the ref, Brandon Ingram was defending an inbounds pass. The guy was standing out of bounds. The guy tried to throw it over Ingram. He literally volleyball spiked it off of him while he's standing out of bounds. So they gave Spain back the ball. I was like, this is how it's going to go. But to your point, this is why FIBA games are interesting because if you're playing
air conditioning,
Spain, that's how it goes.
Right. The air conditioning doesn't work. Steve Kerr is over there dripping sweat. Okay. The arena is apparently 85 years old. Kerr played there like when he was 35 years ago, in the 80s, and apparently it was in better shape then. I'm not there.
I was nervous guys are going to get hurt because they were falling all over the place. Halliburton had a weird fall. Anthony Edwards had a weird fall. I was nervous somebody was going to hurt a knee or a groin or something.
It was the second, the way it was set up, it was a celebration of the Spanish Federation's 100th anniversary. So it was set up as this weekend of games with Luca. Luca played on Friday. Didn't play on Saturday, but the Spanish had Saturday off, so the U.S. were playing the second night of a back-to-back. It was all set up for the U.S. to get beat, and there was, you know, a lot, you know, the Spain was down 10 points at half, and they came out playing the second half like it was an elimination game in the finals. Just all their energy for this game. And so it was an absolutely spectacular test for the U.S. because the Americans often, in FIBA play, face a obscure and challenging circumstances. The style of play, the officiating, the venue, you know, some of the rules.
And everybody's amped up to beat them too.
Right, of course. And so this was an exhibition game, but it was important. And Steve Kerr played the game like he'd played the other exhibition games. Didn't even use his whole bench. Some of the guys didn't get in. At least one of the guys didn't get in. In the second half, shortened his rotation up to like 8 guys. Like really played it like an important game. And the Americans withstood it. They won by 10. And a couple of things that are gonna stand out, and then I'll yield it to you guys. Jalen Brunson has been great, and he was awesome in this game. Scored 20 points. I wish I could tell you the exact final box score, but the Spanish
here website, I can tell you what's important. He went 9 for 9 from the field.
Yeah, 21 right. points. 21.
21 points.
No, sorry.
Okay. The Spanish website that I was looking at is works as well as the air conditioning there in Milan.
Well, I was going to say, what, they spell the numbers out? You can't read them? Like, the numbers.
Well, they're not, the box score is currently not updated past the first quarter. So that's the problem.
Yeah. Anyway, Anthony Edwards, playmaker all over the court, is the leading scorer through 3 games, made all kinds of plays everywhere, and late in the game, he was the victim of some rough calls. Mm-hmm. Late in the game, he made, with Spain still trying to win it, he made a terrific drive where he did a reverse layup around 3 Spanish players to get a basket. Tough basket anywhere in the world under those circumstances. And then a minute later, created a steal by jumping into a passing lane, got the loose ball, went down and finished it at the other end. Playmaker. And Jaren Jackson really defending the front of the rim. And the U.S. hasn't shot the ball particularly well from the outside so far. But in 2019, before the World Cup in China, they finished 7th. Significant red flags in the warm-up games. Nobody was panicking, but significant red flags. 2021 Tokyo Olympics. Now, that was that weird situation where several of the players were still playing in the finals. So they weren't whole. But the guys that they did have, there were red flags. Lost several games. Not looking good. Very shaky. This team looks excellent. Well put together, well coached, focused, good camaraderie, it seems like. And they are going to have some difficult. Jackson, our producer, is saying they did shot 56% from 3 today. Today was the first day they shot well from 3. But
pesky
seriously,
facts.
They shot terribly.
Not bad. 56%.
I want to know where he got the box score. He could have just, that could have been the first
quarter.
They
were 8. They were
ESPN.com has a wire story right here. That's where he got it.
They were 8 for 14 from 3 late in the game. So,
all right. Well, anyway, doesn't mean that they're home free. Still got some things. Obviously, there's some tests ahead, but Steve Kerr has this team looking good. Grant Hill and Sean Ford put the team together with the help of Steve Kerr, I'm sure, prudently for what they had. And early returns on this edition are positive. I know, Bontemps, you were with them last week.
Yeah. I mean, very impressive win today, I thought. Coming back in the second half in Spain to win in Malaga, win that game. I'm a little surprised Josh Hart is basically not in Steve Kerr's rotation. I thought he would get a chance to play more once his contract was done. Steve certainly seems to be opting more towards an offense-first approach. Hard to argue with the way that's gone so far. I continue to be fascinated by the Paolo Banchero at center minutes. I'll be curious to see how that goes if they play some of these bigger teams in the tournament, if he sticks with that. But he clearly believes a lot in Paolo, and having him be able to be an offensive engine and bring the ball up the court and push it in transition. Austin Reeves was a guy that Steve talked about right from the beginning of camp. It was going to be a huge part of this team. He's clearly going to lean on him and Tyrese Haliburton a ton. Those guys have been awesome coming off the bench and playing together in a second unit. And another guy he's talked about from the beginning, Jalen Brunson, has been great all the way through, stepped up. Obviously, this is a difficult game on the road, kind of game you need your leader to step up and perform in. He obviously did. And I think the most important thing that's happened over the past week and a half with this team is Anthony Edwards, a guy who, you know, we talked about, I wrote about him going into camp. We talked about him as having a chance to be sort of the face of this team. Yeah, he's scoring like 14, 15 points a game. He is making defensive plays all over the place. And the way he has bought in, particularly at that end of the court, I think has been the most important thing that's happened with this team. And it's only a week. Obviously, they got a long ways to go. But I think if you look at how this first week and a half has played out for Team USA, I suspect Steve Kerr is thrilled, because I don't think you could have scripted it better from top to bottom than the way this has gone so far.
I would love to add a lot of really in-depth analysis to that, but I'll be honest with you, boys. Right after Brunson gave the thumbs up, sarcastic clap, and this is, I believe, Brunson, I'd have to double check if he got teed up last year, but if not, then he's a guy with one technical foul in his career. So, you know, he kind of tells you how annoyed he was with the officiating to mock them like that. But pretty soon after that, I took one of those inadvertent old man watching sports on the couch on a Sunday afternoon naps. I'm just being honest. I did. And I woke up and, you know, it was like late in the game and the U.S. was up 12. I was like, well, I'm a real professional.
You were, you know, it's a lazy August Sunday afternoon. I don't blame you.
He's hard at work these days.
I mean, if you want my honest opinion, my preference would have been to watch what happened in the St. Jude. I still don't know. I mean, I know who won, but I don't know what happened. I mean, you know, I don't know how it unfolded.
I mean, golf is a way to cure insomnia. Typically, basketball is a sport that keeps me awake, but today, I don't know what. I just, you know, I apologize. I conked out on the couch.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So who's ever up there, whether it's the roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live.
All right, well, it was a, it's shaping up to be a good Team USA, and they haven't won the World Cup in 9 years. So, you know, it's not the be-all, end-all, but, you know, it'd be nice to bring it home.
Okay, so
USA basketball.
Canada and Germany. France is always a big-time you know, threat as far as the FIBA game goes. Who else are you looking at as real potential contenders in this thing?
Well, I would have thought the Slovenians, but yeah. Not looking as potent as they did the last time around.
That's why I was asking if everybody goes to Philippines, because when I said Shea might be the best player in the Philippines, I was trying to make a joke. Slovenia might not make it there, but I'm going to try the whole tournament.
They will make it there. I think you have to at least give Luka the the threat of at least being a metal team. I don't think they're going to based on where they're at, but he's good enough that he could maybe carry them far.
I hear you. They've got, obviously we talked about Vlatko Chanchar's knee injury. That's going to probably not just knock him out of this whole tournament, but as you mentioned, maybe even next summer, probably all the season. Ido Muric, who was the captain of that team, he's out. He had his own knee injury, and then Dragic isn't playing. So when you're looking at their Eurobasket championship team, they're down, I think, three starters.
Well, and does Randolph?
Randolph hadn't played for him. Played for him in a while. He didn't play for him in the Olympics.
Right. That was the last time he played. It was only one Eurobasket, right?
Right. And so Mike Toby, I guess Toby is back now. That's their naturalized American.
Toby's back.
Yeah, their pick and roll partner for Luka. I don't know why he wasn't there for their first few warm-up games, but he's back now. He's the guy who
I asked
him how familiar he was with Slovenia. Like when he first heard of Slovenia, he said, when they asked me to get a passport.
I think you told that on this podcast a couple of weeks ago, old man. I heard that somewhere though.
From me.
Australia is a serious contender. France is a serious contender. Spain's a serious contender.
And Canada. I think those are the
Canada.
Four.
The thing about it is, if the U.S. handles their business, which there's five games in the first two rounds, there's a pool play. If the U.S. wins their pool and then gets into the first seed in the second round and wins the second round, which even as a highly diminished team that they were in 2019, they weren't good at all. And then Jason Tatum sprained his ankle in pool play, and that was a huge blow. They still went 5-0 in those first five games. And if they win those first five games and they play New Zealand, Greece without Giannis, and Jordan, those are their three teams. By the way, Steve Kerr.
Do any other shoe companies have teams?
The Chinese, who are awful. Steve Kerr.
A lot of history with Jordan.
Yes, but Steve Kerr played in Jordan as a teenager, he was saying the other day.
Yeah.
But anyway, those are their pool play games. They should win those. And then they're going to play Greece in a warm-up game in Abu Dhabi, so we'll see how that matchup is. And then the teams on their sort of side of the bracket for the second round, Serbia is there, but it's not looking like the same type of Serbian team. Mm. So if they win those first five games, they will be on the opposite side of all of those teams until the semifinals, which means that between Canada, France, Australia, and Canada, France, Australia,
Spain.
Who am I missing? And Spain. They only have to beat two of those four if they handle their business the first five games. So it is set up for them to be in good position as long as they play well, and they should. And that's the way they've been playing so far. So, okay. Congratulations to Dirk Nowitzki, your guy, Dirk McMahon.
He would not be flattered by you saying he's my guy, but congrats to him regardless.
Well, you covered him for many years. He's always been kind to me. Dwayne Wade.
Class act.
He is phenomenal to deal with, no doubt.
Dwayne Wade, the statue in Dallas, he's leaning too far back. But other than that.
Dude, look at some of the old highlights. He would, kick it back that far.
All right. It's impressive. Tony Parker and Greg Popovich, congratulations to getting in. And of course, our guy, Mark Spears. Thank you for listening to the Collective Podcast. The next time we talk, I will hopefully be joining you from the Middle East, and I'll have a lot more to talk about once I get there and get on the ground and see what's going on. So talk to you then, and who knows what will happen in the old
what
trade
will
talk.
Is Brian will be lacking sleep. We'll be hearing it.
Adios, amigos.